Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, the top contenders for Hollywood's awards season have emerged already following the autumn film festivals. Hamnet, Sinners and Marty Supreme. They're just a few of the titles that you can expect to hear more about now that the awards race is underway, although some of the potential contenders haven't even premiered yet. And to talk about the films to look forward to in the run-up to the Oscars next March, I have Gráinne Humphreys, who's director of the Dublin International Film Festival, and Dave Hanratty, who's host of the No Encore podcast, with me in the studio. You're both very welcome. Thank you very much. Good to have some film buffs with us, because a lot of what we're talking about today, they're not in the cinemas yet. People may not have even heard about them. So really part of this is giving people tips about what to watch out for over the coming months. So the standouts, Gráinne.
So the standouts, I mean, in a way, it's like a long marathon, right, is the way I'm going to kind of describe the Oscars. So, you know, there's a big competition between Venice and Cannes as to who can kind of present, if you like, and world premiere the films that are going to end up, as I said, on the podium at the Oscars. So from Cannes, you have It Was Just an Accident, which is an Iranian film, which is the French nomination. You would have also had Sentimental Value, wonderful, a Norwegian film, and with Stellan Skarsgård. And the reason I mentioned the two, if you like, foreign language films, or what would have been called foreign language, is the Oscars has opened up, Claire, even over the time that we've been talking about it, it's opened up to global audiences. So it's not necessarily just restricted to English language films or even American films like it might have felt like in the last couple of years. So the other film that I want to throw into this mix before Cannes was Sinners, which is an amazing film. Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan playing an amazing kind of double act of twins. It's a musical, it's a horror, it's a really fantastic film. And that went out way early, ahead, if you like, and it feels like the pace setter, if you like, for this, because it's a film that has so many wonderful elements to it. You could see it appealing to a broad audience. And the other thing that's changed is I remember when the Oscar winner was always something good and worthy and important about a big subject. And they've changed again the rules to try and bring commercial films. So if you have a film that has reached a wide audience, that will suddenly bring in a younger demographic and get maybe a different kind of, you know, group or interest group in to watch the actual broadcast itself, which is kind of part of the agenda.
So, Dave, you know, with Sinners being out and around there for a while and we're a good bit out from the Oscars, isn't there a strategy among some of the companies now not to release until closer to the time?
Yeah, it's changed a little bit because you can ride the wave of good PR for quite some time. I mean, if you look at some of the film festivals, if you pop at Cannes, you've got like 10 months of PR essentially behind you, because you go from festival to festival. In the case of Sinners, that came out, God, was it April or May I saw that in the cinema? And it was this kind of cultural phenomenon for a while, especially amongst film fans. It was a box office smash when it wasn't necessarily expected to be. There's even kind of like a lot of social commentary in there. People are really rooting for the people involved. So it's been talked about for months while it's been in the cinema. And now that it's kind of available on demand at home, it kind of gets a bit of a second life. So it used to be a case that back in the day, very much like January. January was seen as prestige film time for a while. Go bring your parents to the cinema, go see whatever's going to win the Oscar. That's kind of reversed now. January's a bit of a dumping ground now for some films with studios that they don't know where else to put them. So, or you might get a film being re-released. Sinners might come back to the cinema in January.
Just to remind people.
Exactly, and get a second push.
And will you explain to us who decides who's on the shortlist, what the judges get to see, and what's in the mix?
So the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, or Oscars as we like to kind of shorten it for, because it's just such a mouthful. There's over 10,000 members. Now, that has expanded in recent years, and that can be everybody from directors to actors to screenwriters to producers to industry figures. You don't necessarily have to have been nominated for an Oscar to be on that panel. Now, so much has changed in this time, especially in terms of diversity, because about 10 years ago, you had a situation where people were very rightly complaining that it was a load of old white men. And it really, really was. Yeah. And that was being reflected as well in the films that were winning. And we're still way off, by the way, especially even, I think, was it Travis Tillman won like the Emmy recently? He was the first male black actor to win in that category. Like, we are still miles away from the kind of progression that we want to kind of see. But essentially, if you were on, if Claire Byrne was on the Oscar panel, you would get screeners, you would get these films sent to you, so you don't have to go to the cinema to see them, you can actually watch them at home. And then you have to kind of give your order from 1 to 10 in terms of the films you want for the Best Picture category, 1 to 5 for the actors and so on. So it's all tabulated and collated by, I think PricewaterhouseCoopers are the ones who kind of, they're the ones who control the envelopes at the end. Mm-hmm. But there's a preliminary voting stage, there's the actual voting stage. It is very similar to a political election. It's pretty much the same mechanics.
Mm-hmm. So that's how the shortlist is created, because you got the 10,000 there.
Yeah.
Then how does it go from shortlist to winner?
So you have like kind of a long list, then you kind of whittle that down, and again you give your order of preference.
You vote again.
Yes,
but the 10,000.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. So there's 10,000 people doing this. So like it's someone else's job to tabulate all that. But again, there's people out there who they love that. Like, yeah. That's their life.
Mm-hmm. And Gráinne, you were saying that the blockbuster now has a home in this whole process, whereas before it didn't. So things like Wicked Part 2.
Yeah. Part 2, which I think actually has a really good chance, because if you think about it, Lord of the Rings, it was the third film that went and kind of collected, if you like, all the prizes, because mm-hmm. it had given an economy to New Zealand. It had given all of these actors parts for years, but also it had this huge connection with an audience. And I kind of feel like Wicked could do very well in that particular space. Another one that I'm going to throw in there, and I know it's not controversial, was F1.
The Brad Pitt film,
Which again had a huge commercial kind of connection. And I kind of feel like Brad Pitt finally got his Oscar. It was in a film that's a big crowd pleaser. The car sequences are fantastic. And increasingly the Oscars are, because the stunts are going to be finally recognised this year. So it is beginning to kind of embrace, if you like, yeah. action genres, as opposed to the worthy biopic of the, you know, politician who saves a country died. Or the.
Well, how do you feel about that, Dave, about those commercially successful films being part of the winning group?
They've had to do it because it was 2009 or so, they expanded the Best Picture list from 5 to 10.
Yeah.
And that felt like they wanted to get Toy Story 3 in there, I think, which it's a good movie, but it was a box office smash. They've had to do it for a variety reasons. One is television ratings. Like, the Oscars hasn't been as popular as it's been. It's getting kind of back there and such, but they need to kind of bring everyone to the party, and they need to bring you to the party if you went to see the mainstream box office smash but didn't go see the worthy but probably brilliant foreign language film that Gráinne was talking about earlier on. I mean, does it cheapen it a bit? Maybe. But then at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is, let's be honest here, a night out for Hollywood. Like, it's a big industry night out.
Yeah, but it also should be about films that you want to go and see in the cinema. You know, and that you did go and see in the cinema, as you say. You want to see that represented on the night. Otherwise, what's the point? If Brad Pitt isn't in the room, what's the point?
Well, do you know what? It's funny. I was at Toronto, and Toronto is this amazing kind of audience-facing festival. So you have Venice, where, you know, some wonderful films kind of like premiered, including Smashing Machine, for instance, which is the Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt film, which mm-hmm. is, again, very hotly tipped, which is a biopic, a wrestling biopic, but Dwayne Johnson going serious.
Yes,
which in a way
I've read about
is a really
this.
Clever
really
move.
Interesting. Is it good?
My understanding, I didn't see
you
it,
didn't see
is
it.
It's fantastic. And then the other dark horse in that conversation is Emily Blunt, who plays the wife, which again, apparently is one of the shoe-ins for one of the actor awards. I'll feel a bit conflicted because the other big leading contender for Best Actress is Jessie Buckley in Hamlet.
Oh, yes,
With Paul Mescal. This is Chloe Zhao, her new film, the story of a love affair, Paul Mescal and Jessie Buckley. But this film had people in floods of tears. I mean, the emotional response to this film, people saying, you know, did you see it? And normally, certain level of professional goes, yeah, I did. Good, not bad. These people choked up, unable to speak. Telluride, and then the follow up screening, I think, was in Toronto, and again, just really, really worked.
She's incredible, though, and
she
we're
is.
All on Team Jessie now. If there's a whisper of, you know, a chance that she's going to be on that list, we all have to push for that. Where's the lobbying? What do we do?
Is it lobbying or is it a bookmaker? Is we can actually put money on it, because literally, you know, as I said, the word is that this is going to be one of the front leaders, and I kind of think. That's the other side to this, is that you go in watching the Oscars with, you know, your own personal favourite, and those are the ones that you then watch.
You're cheering
to see.
People on.
You
yeah.
are cheering
it's,
people
it's
on.
It's tribalism in a
are
way.
Are the same stories out and about Paul Mescal then for his role in Hamlet?
They are. I think people liked both of them. I mean, in a sense, I think if anyone remembers Thelma and Louise, do you remember Thelma and Louise? And
yeah.
both of them were nominated and yeah. they cancelled each other out. So I think oh, yeah. the huge advantage is that they'll be in different categories. And then the other thing that we're all very familiar is when they go one for best actor, best actress, one for best supporting,
best support.
So it's a game that they play across the kind of awards
campaign.
It's very
political, yeah. Like you have your agents and you have your kind of studio makers who are essentially putting people up for certain categories because they figure, well, he's not going to win the best actor, but he might win the best supporting actor. That was kind of the Brad Pitt thing with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because he effectively has equal screen time with Leo in that movie, but they knew he wouldn't win actor, but they thought he could win supporting actor, and he did. I should also point out as well that for anybody listening, you might think that everyone plays fair in this type of situation. They don't. And not only that, there's a brand new rule that's been brought in this year where all members of the Academy are now required to watch all nominated films in a category.
Because they didn't?
They did not, no. And people.
Shocking!
I hate to burst the Hollywood bubble here, but there is a thing of people just saying, oh, I saw that film, it was wonderful, I'm giving it my number one. And it's like, no, you just want to curry favour with that actor or that director. But now you have to physically prove that you've watched the films.
How do you do that?
If you watch it online, you have to essentially show that you've done the runtime, which again makes me wonder if...
You can cheat that.
Could I just put it on and leave?
Yeah.
Or if you went to a film festival, as Grania has, you have to sign a document that says that you're in there and there'll be security people who'll be watching you the entire time.
Yeah.
So they're taking it very seriously now.
There was a great story I heard over the weekend. It was a podcast with David Hare, who wrote The Hours, and he was hotly tipped to win Best Screenplay for that. And he went to one of the many, many, many events that you have with the other nominees and the other actors, and he met Steven Spielberg, and Spielberg said to him, you know you have written the best screenplay this year. But he looked down. And David Hare went, I knew he hadn't voted for me. And I thought that would be the bit where you actually are, you know, you're all together. It's all about the enjoyment, the creation, the process.
Mm.
But actually, you're all just going, did you vote for me? Did you not vote for me?
And that's why Steven Spielberg isn't an actor.
True.
Fake it.
Very bad performance there.
So what are the films then that don't get nominated, like guaranteed will not be in there?
Comedies and horror generally the kind of the two ones that it is changing though to a degree, because obviously The Substance last year, which we all thought Demi Moore might win the Oscar. In fairness, Mikey Madison was brilliant in Anora, which is also a comedy, you know, a comedy of errors, a comedy of tragedy, a tragic comedy thing, whatever you want to put it. But basically, yeah, like it's for a long time the Oscars was obsessed with, and still is in many ways, struggle, you know, real life kind of struggle, whether an actor gets to kind of put on makeup. I mean, The Rock, we mentioned
lose
there.
Lose weight, gain weight. New skills, singing, fighting.
Hair, prosthetics, you name it. Learning a new language, anything kind of go full method like Daniel Day-Lewis. So these are all technically brilliant things. But you look at like Liam Neeson, The Naked Gun, that's an amazing performance.
Yeah.
Not a chance, not a hope it's
going
to get nominated for an Oscar because it's not serious enough. Horror, like some of the most incredible work you'll ever see in terms of makeup departments, in terms of suspense and some of the acting. Again, it just doesn't really register. It is changing slightly, but much like the progress in general in Hollywood and reflected by the Oscars, we're talking decades before we get a proper winner for, I think, a horror film ever again.
Yeah,
but why is that, I wonder? Particularly with horror, you know?
Snobbery.
Yeah, it's harking back to the old days where we don't want the movies that people watch in their droves to be part of this celebration.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely changing, though. I mean, I think that the horror, there's a lot of really great directors working in horror now. I mean, you know, if you wanted, Sinners was bigger than just a horror film, and I think that's a kind of interesting kind of like case in point. But if you were to look at a film like A House of Dynamite, the new Catherine Bigelow film, I mean, that's a really interesting film. It's Catherine Bigelow, it's Idris Elba, it's Rebecca Ferguson. You know, it's a big political film. She obviously has won an Oscar. She was the first director, a female director, to win an Oscar for best film. And I think there's a part where, you know, that's a good shot. That's if you're a betting person, you could put some money on it because of the importance of having somebody like Catherine Bigelow in the conversation and the subject in the conversation. Another interesting one will be the Paul Thomas Anderson film and One Battle After Another, which is a Leo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah. I'm hearing a lot about that. And I've read reviews that say it's fabulous and he's fabulous and reviews that say he's holding together a turkey. So which...
God! Wow.
I'm seeing it tomorrow for the record.
So, yeah, you're seeing it tomorrow.
I cannot wait, and I've tried to avoid all the trailers. We actually had a conversation about this. Do you want to reveal how you feel about the film?
I'm not a huge fan of this Paul Thomas Anderson, but I do admire certain things that he's doing in it, and he's talking about a particular kind of America. I think that the dark horse in One Battle After Another is Sean Penn. It's not a Leo DiCaprio film. I think it's a Sean Penn film. He is electric in every scene. And if you wanted to put money on a sure bet for maybe a best actor or best supporting actor, it would be Sean Penn.
The Academy love him as well.
They do love him. Yeah. It's an action kind of thriller, kind of very commercial facing film, which we've been saying is something that the Oscars go for. It has a great cast. Do you know what? I don't think I've been a fan of Leo since he turned 20. And I have to deal with that myself.
You do, yeah.
I do. And I am, slowly.
So what's that, since Titanic or The Beach?
Oh, before Titanic. I mean, I love What's Eating Gilbert Grape and all this stuff when he was really, really good. I feel he's somewhat kind of cynical and kind of, there's a couple of turns in this where he's a bit like Jack Nicholson, and I was kind of going, do you know what? Jack Nicholson. Yeah.
Can you leave all that at the door before you go in to see this film? Because I would like to know.
I like DiCaprio in recent years. I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a masterpiece and he was amazing in it. So I think The Beach is good. I know people hate it. I think it's actually pretty good. So no, I'm hyped. I'm excited. But I've been trying my best to avoid all the kind of hype for this, which in my role as a film critic I shouldn't be doing. But tomorrow I'm going to go in as a pure punter.
Forget about her prejudices.
And I was surrounded. I brought my other half, who's a Leo fan, and he sat saying, I'm really enjoying this. I really, really like
this.
I was grumping, but everybody else around me was in full enjoyment, laughing. It's got PTA flourishes, you know, so it will have you laughing.
Sighing, I think, was the word that your partner used, wasn't it?
That was me.
Openly sighing in the cinema.
Yeah. Okay, I have openly sighed for many years in the cinema. That's the trouble.
There's another one we want to mention as well, the new retelling of Frankenstein. And I don't know if that falls into the horror genre and therefore won't feature in the Oscars.
Do you know, the other thing I was going to say is that Guillermo del Toro is such a name and such an auteur he's above horror.
He's won Best Director before for The Shape of Water, which was a very weird Best Picture win as well. It was a very strange, unconventional thing. So there's a lot of respect for him. There's a lot of respect for the actors involved. But again, it's one of those things where you'd be surprised. Like, obviously on the festival circuit, you'll see films that you think everyone's like, this is going to win the Oscar in 10 months. And it just disappears. Like, it is strange how things just drop out and disappear and just vanish. And it is strange how a thing comes out of nowhere and there's this incredible momentum behind it and a PR campaign behind it. Like I say, keep an eye on Dwayne Johnson because that man is desperate to win the Oscar. I think he'll get nominated. He might well win it.
It's the work side to it. I mean, it is really interesting to see the campaigns where people are literally turning up all the time. Do you know? I mean, we're in the middle of a presidential campaign. We know what that's going to be
like. Cillian Murphy did it. I mean, and he doesn't like getting out in front of the press, but he did it for Oppenheimer and he deserved to win the award for the performance. But he also had to go out and do all the interviews and all the press and all the parties, and he did it because he wanted to win the Oscar.
Yeah. I read an interview with Dwayne Johnson this week in the New York Times. I don't know if you saw it, where the interviewer asked him about being taught how to throw a punch. This was back in his sports career. Yeah. And in this bizarre situation where he jumped up off the sofa, he was lying on the sofa in his house during this interview and started to throw punches. And the whole interview, their entire interaction was a play fight. Sounded like the best fun ever.
We've all been there as journalists. Yeah, it's a standard day at the office for us. He has it in his contract, by the way, that he can't lose a fight in the Fast and the Furious films. So
I think that's the kind of contribution.
Says a lot.
We should all have that.
Listen, we're way at the end, but thank you so much for coming in. It was great fun to talk to you, and we'll catch up as time goes on and we lead up to the Oscars. Dave Hanratty and Grainne Humphrey.